Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Gula Dome.
Gula Dome.
You won't need all of your seat, my friend. You'll just need the back part, because the front part we already sold. So we technically double sold the seats.
Schmegma.
Already?
Huh. I don't miss it.
That threw me off completely.
I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. So, hey, it's...
Hello.
Ghoulcast. And, and Lucifer's back.
What am I? Yeah. Have I been killed again? I don't even pay attention.
You died.
You were boner killed by Bigfoot so many times.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. I never noticed that you have a Robbie the Robot little miniature over there that's going to be missing later.
It came with the tin of when they released Forbidden Planet on DVD.
Which I have of yours still.
Oh, hey!
Yeah, those Robbie the Robot Funko Pops are like $30 now.
They're adorable.
Yeah, they're great. I have a couple of the B9s, but yeah, I'm going to take it.
I broke his helmet, though. He's not as cute. He's sort of cute. But
he's helmet cute. Breaker.
Well, that shit happens. I've had him a minute. But, okay, so, cool guest. I'm Chris. You clearly know that Lucifer is back, and then the other guy would be Paul.
Hi, guys.
Can of Paul.
And we're the Beatles.
Holocaust.
And we are the Beatles.
Where's Dingo?
Dingus?
He's at home writing his Bigfoot poem.
Right.
That he doesn't know about yet.
Dingo Stark.
You called him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow. I didn't say that.
I apologize.
You shouldn't
Glenn.
Talk
You're
about
George. What? You're George, Glenn.
Wait, who am I then?
You're Ringo, motherfucker.
I am Paul McCartney.
We can flip on Paul and John. I don't care.
I'll be Yoko.
All right, that's true, but...
That's true?
No.
All right, you're Paul, bass player.
I am the bass player. You would be John.
Okay, I'll be John.
And you'd be George.
But Glenn's going to have an issue with that.
No, I think he likes Ringo.
I love Ringo.
He loves George. Those are the two dudes he loves.
Yeah,
so.
He does, yeah.
He'll
take Ringo.
I'll take Yoko. Yeah. I'm cool. Basically, remember.
He loves... Anyway.
So, this go-around... we are going to. We wrote little tall tales about a giant Bigfoot.
Tall tales.
The genesis of this was when I had some time off of work. I decided I had to have the Blu-ray of Willow Creek and watch it for the third time. And that is a weird movie. That the more I see it, the more I like it.
Yeah,
so I actually
too.
Like blew right into the. Whew,
I mean,
right into the
Bigfoot boner.
Well, you had mentioned before that Willow Creek is really one of the only actually good Bigfoot movies. That's really actually good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, there's some that are watchable.
And I think it's
right.
Probably
that moment.
Yep.
Like the Blair Witch, and that the less you show, the better, probably, just because it's hard to really. Once you go Bigfoot, you can't go back, kind of. But, like, it's hard to kind of pull off, and then it's kind of like, how are you going to portray him? Like, it's...
Right.
I don't know. I think that's just... It's such a...
Andre the Giant.
Well, it... Yes.
Right.
With a toupee.
Right.
And a mustache.
Yes.
But, I mean, I think...
Big show with a Chewbacca mask.
Yes. I think it's such an iconic kind of thing, you know, monster, that... You in your head, you kind of think of how you, see it, but also it's like, it's kind of built up, like, you're like, something's going to happen, what's it going to do, and then it kind of, like, stalks around.
Willow Creek, you're talking about? Or just
no, just in general, when you show
Bigfoot in general.
That's why it's hard to kind of, if you show him.
Yeah.
Like, if you go full Bigfoot, like...
Well, I think one of the scariest things... never go full Bigfoot. I think one of the scariest things is when you, there's the tent and you're hearing the howl. Or whatever, you know, in a Bigfoot movie. The howl is scary, usually.
Well, this the whole notion that...
In Blair Witch Creek, Willow Creek?
Blair Witch Creek.
Willow Witch.
It is funny that, like, the commentary is really funny, because he's kind of like, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like everybody kind of... He even said there was something, like, some along the lines people were calling it and stuff, but...
Well, it was smart, because he got good actors.
Oh, yeah,
and
when...
funny
and
convincing.
I forgot reading, like, when he was first going to shoot that, it was going to be a... Like one of like Best in Show, that kind of thing, where it was going to like look at the Bigfoot kind of devotees in that culture and look at the, you know, the subculture kind of in a comedic way.
Some of those people made it in.
Yeah.
There's actual real documentation.
But he realized, he went to one of those shows, and he realized that he can't because they're always kind of the butt of the joke. And he's like,
right.
kind of like, I guess he's a believer. So he was kind of like, well, what if I take this seriously and kind of do it straight? And, and it's interesting, he drops an interesting theory about the movie, too.
And the he is Bobcat Goldthwait, by the way.
I mean,
what?
I mean, Bigfoot, it's actually. Bigfoot does a commentary.
Right, right, right.
Hey, everybody.
Bigfoot. Bigfoot himself.
Bigfoot.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He's a soul.
I almost believe you.
That would be fucking...
Like a guy as Bigfoot.
Bigfoot's sad.
Like him knocking things together.
That's what you think Bigfoot sounds like?
It's up to everyone.
You're gonna,
I mean, I think he actually sounds like Barry White.
Hello.
Hey,
hello,
baby.
I've come to love you forever.
With my teeth. All right, so...
But anyway, yeah.
So, yeah, this is going to be long enough as it is.
Right. So you came up with this idea while you were listening to the commentary?
Well, just watching it, like, I thought it'd be... I was like, what if I, you know, it would be kind of fun to do a story about Bigfoot. So I'm like, I'm going to fucking do a Bigfoot story. And I told Paul, and he's like, oh, that's awesome. I'm like, we should fucking do this as a podcast. Like, yeah!
So I was so happy because...
So you did this, you came up with this when you were off work and you had time to write a story. And watch movies and be free.
See where we're going with it.
What about you?
Actually, No.
Hey, what about...
let me answer the question, Bob.
I said, no.
I wrote it at work.
That's right, you told me that.
But being a receptionist, I have time to write it at work.
Right.
Well, I was really happy when you said that. Like, let's all write a Bigfoot story. I was like, yes, because I was like... I want to write a Bigfoot story, but I don't know. Chris's idea. I like, as soon as he said it, I'm like, oh, I've never thought of writing a Bigfoot story. I wanted to do it. And he's like, why don't we all do it? And I was like, yay. Why don't we?
So how long did it take you to write yours?
Oh, my gosh. It took a while. Because
like a week?
Maybe a little longer. Yeah, it was a little longer because I couldn't think of anything. I wanted to write something so desperately. I'm like, where am I going with this? And then finally an idea came out.
Yeah, my idea was like kind of like Bigfoot meets John Holmes.
Whoa.
Like some kind of adult deep throat, but hairy deep throat.
These are going to be really different stories than Bigfoot.
That's what it should be called, because it's just like that. Deepfoot. Thank you for reaching. I didn't have a name for it, but now I do.
Behind the furry door.
Dude, you're gonna hate it. Mine is so bad.
I just read the title.
It's so bad.
Deepfoot.
So once I start, just turn the podcast off for 20 minutes. I timed it, or I wrote so many words, and I looked it up as to how long it should play out. It should be 20 minutes. So I'm perfect. Good with that, and I don't give a fuck if you like it or not, people. I do actually.
Hey,
I care. I'm just trying to be tough.
Don't insult our audience.
Bigfoot.
We are our audience. Later, Chris, he was telling me what? Like, you're not the audience, you're the host.
Paul's mom will be like, never seen this.
Does your mom listen to this shit?
Sometimes.
Hi, Mom.
Once in a great while.
Hi, Mom. Sorry.
She'll probably skip this one. She's like, oh, Bigfoot. No, I can't listen to this shit.
I always liked that movie, Sasquatch, with Lance Henriksen. Because he's in it, and I like Lance Henriksen.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool for me. And I like the one that the Blair Witch guys made. You know, the characters I wanted to die real quick. But wasn't that a Blair Witch guy?
Yeah, like this.
Exist, yeah.
See, I kind of like that one, too.
Yeah.
But I like
them the creature. And the creature. And they have
That's them. What I liked. All of the points that you made were accurate. They were accurate. I couldn't deny any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the monster. Period. Because Chris was dead on about it. It was silly and stupid, but the monster looked cool, so I was like, yay.
I'm a huge cryptozoology fan, though, that when it comes to these kind of movies, I used to just collect movies because they were kind of cryptid-ish.
Right.
Even shit like Frankenfish or just dumb shit like, what's that one, Abomination or...
Abominable.
That too.
I like that one.
All those. Abominable is actually...
Abominable's one of the better
pretty
ones.
Pretty creepy, weird. He's got that extended jaw
it's
or whatever.
It's funny, too.
Bite somebody's face off.
Yeah, that's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's not bad. That's a good one.
That's probably my second favorite one.
Yeah, and Deepfoot.
Deepfoot will be on the list.
Deepfoot.
So how are we doing this?
I don't know. I feel like Lucifer threw the gauntlet down because he's all like, I don't care if nobody likes mine or nothing. So I guess we'll dare the audience, because if it's really that terrible, then
it's fucking
they'll never hear
I'm
me.
I'm
going to
hear it. No, I'm really curious.
All right, I'll be doing this.
All right, I can do this. I'll go first.
All right.
Blow my wad.
Okay. And forget, like I said, I really just threw this thing together, and it's not meant to be.
You're really selling it.
Dumb as it is.
It's not dumb. It's going to be awesome.
Dumb. My name, Bigfoot.
Want me to read it?
Case File 13, The Creature from Taquamenon, June 6, 2016. This came to us by way of an old friend that I will call Chris. Upon investigation of the story, both Sarah and myself became witness to something we cannot explain, nor do we have enough evidence to consider everything before us to be truth. The note read, I cannot tell you if what I see before me is truth or fantasy, nor can I recall if maybe I had heard this tale before, but it all appears to me to be some kind of desperate tome left for anyone to find. It was found, but there is no way for me to tell just how long ago it was written or lost. What I can tell you that it was brought to me by a colleague who had been given this strange thing by a woman called Cassandra. Cassandra was an elderly woman, some said to be close to 100, although she didn't look older than 50. She seemed to get around like somebody half that age. She was thin, yet strong, and had lived deep in the woods in a small town near Taquamenon Falls. She rarely came into town for anything, but just about a week ago she made an appearance at the cafe closest to the edge of the woods by where she lives. She had brought in a large jar of morel mushrooms and gave them to her old friend Jay, who was the cook there. This was not out of the ordinary, but what was very strange is that she left several dollars on the counter with some kind of old piece of material. As it turns out, my colleague Paul is a close friend of Jay. Paul is an avid collector of strange and old artifacts, knows my interest in such possible and most mysterious sorts of unknown and paranormal mysteries. He acquired the material and brought it to me. We spoke of the possibilities and waxed curious over the possible avenues this creepy note might bring us, and decided to share it with you and Sarah. If there are people out there, dead or alive, we wanted to do our best to help. We were right to assume that law enforcement wanted nothing to do with it. A tall tale, fake, a hoax, they might say. I felt different, and that's why I'm writing this here. Attached to Chris's letter was an old decrepit piece of thin leather. It might have been torn off from the inside of a jacket. Written on the inside were fragments of words with dried blood stained about them. The blood was from a rabbit, but the message was clear. Help us. Marie taken, not human. After some minimal investigation, we came upon a cold case regarding the disappearance of Ben Hauser and Marie Sergeant from 2006. They were last seen heading up to northern Michigan from their place in West Virginia for one of their many getaways. They were hunters, loved to fish and camp. They would leave their cell phones behind on whatever adventure they would set out on and park her Jeep miles away from destination. Family members said they were expert hikers, and at the time, they were not surprised to not hear from them for weeks. When they never showed back up, reports were made, search parties were formed, but nothing was to be found. Marie's Jeep was found in downtown Detroit months later. It had been stripped down and torn apart. It was thought that they met a nasty end at the hands of drug seekers or gang members. No bodies were ever found, and no arrests were made. Sarah and I made our way out to the old diner and got directions out to where Cassandra lived at. It was a long drive, and then at least a mile on foot, before we found a small house in the middle of the woods. It looked like she was the last resident of an old village that had contained no more than a dozen small homes. Everything was grown over by weeds and trees, and there was not a single vehicle to be spotted. Her house was hid from the mild light. Oops, I'm sorry. Her house was spotted from the mild light that crept out of her kitchen window. Inside, there was only a couple of candles burning, and they were almost out. Cassandra sat in a chair at the back of the room, staring out at us as we peered in. Sarah called to her as we felt the soft sound of a woman's voice might be a friendlier calling versus my deeper voice and prominent stature. The woman's head tilted slightly, but she did not respond. Sarah called to her once more, but when she continued to stare at us without an answer, we decided to back away from the house and take a second look about us just to feel secure. We walked a long way to get there to not have any sort of answer. We decided to take a look around the other abandoned houses to see if there was anything of note. Some of them had looked like they were left to rot while in the middle of a regular day. Some had clothes that were laid out to be folded from laundry, and others had plates of rotten food still on the tables. Some doors were closed, others were open, and then there were some that seemed to be kicked in. We spent nearly an hour just walking about and seeking information from the small, dead village when the sun began to set. We had a long way to get back. Not that the darkness would keep us from being there, but the trail to get there was thin, filled with holes that might be the cause of a twisted ankle if we were less than careful. It was then that we saw the glow of something that led us further into the woods. It must have been a big truck or some kind of bulldozer from what we saw to begin with. As we walked towards the grumbling sounds and the glowing into the deeper territory, our vision became somewhat blurred and our breathing became wheezy. Maybe it was an allergy or possibly something that was being made back there. The thoughts of some backwoods meth lab entered my mind, and I wondered if we should even go any further. We are private investigators for hire, but supernatural and paranormal curiosity was something we would delve into out of our own nature. In other words, we had no real business being back there, and the last thing we wanted to do is run upon some meth lab or even a pot farm and then be messed with. Still, we moved forward, almost in a trance. We must have lost track of time, because by the time we got back to the car, 24 hours had passed. It seems like we were only out there overnight, but whatever happened to us, we lost an entire day. Neither one of us can, at any point, recall when daylight rose again. No additional day had seen us, nor we it. We experienced something called lost time. We wandered in and out of areas, some that seemed the same, but they could not have been. We moved deep into some unknown territory that, after our return, we attempted to reach again on another day. The second time around, we spoke to Cassandra. She was kind and easy to speak with. She claims that the people just moved out to get closer to the city, over time, one family at a time. She also told us that it was impossible to get lost in these old woods. We all walked back behind the last houses and onto that trail, only to find ourselves at a river that she would often get water for laundry or boiling. One of the finest things that she had loved about the area were the mushrooms. They grew like crazy. She could find them during the spring months and have enough to last until next year. She also had no recollection of the first night when we visited. In fact, the more I think about it, the less I can recall. What did happen, however, and what I wish I could forget, is what we came upon during some lost hours of the night out there. We had both fallen into a serious coughing spell around 1 a.m. that night. For me, an ex-smoker, I thought that maybe I was finally paying the price of prolonged abuse to my lungs. For Sarah, though, she was hacking up her lungs just the same, each one of us turning more pale as the night air invaded us. Then, in almost an instant, it stopped. The air grew still and cold. Unseasonable chill swept through the trees. We both sat down and held on to one another. It was cold in that way that body heat would help, but if we were to stay much longer, we might surely freeze. It was then that the sounds began again, loud rumbling and threatening winds. To our left, the glow that we had thought we would have passed hours ago appeared down the trail a bit. We were going to go to it, but then we saw something else. From the darkness and inside of thick, dense brush, an ominous figure appeared. From the distance we were at, it was hard to tell the height of the being, but it was very large in stature. It easily resembled the shape of a large man built like a wall. The sound we heard ended up being that the thing was breathing and moaning. It bled through the woods like a giant machine. All at once, a smell flew through the air and it hit us, like a wet dog, urine, and rotten eggs. It was as though the thing was standing next to us, but it was at least 20 yards down the way. We made not a sound. It felt like even my very breath would give us away. I stayed so still while Sarah trembled in my arms. Tears fell down her cheeks. I could not tell if that she was scared or if it was from the smell, and to this day she cannot recall even crying. As the thing moved over a small hill towards the glow, I could see that it was covered in a coat of hair, or at least looked like fur or hair. It walked with a lumbering slowness, but a solid state of being that gave the feeling of being in the presence of something monstrous. Tension rose inside of me, and my blood chilled. Still, we followed it. It had vanished over the hill. We were not too anxious to come upon the same area too quickly. What if it was waiting for us? By the time we had reached the top of the hill, the glow had subsided, and the thing was out of sight. Down to the left, back off the trail, there was a fire, and that sound. The thing was groaning, still, but this time, there was the sound of crying, sobbing, quiet with quivering wail heard underneath, heavy breathing, groaning, and then silence. This repeated. We passed several trees, and then found ourselves in a spot where we began to feel safe. For only a moment, and we could see what was happening by the fire. It was a sight that burned my eyes. I could not believe what was before me, but this horror had followed us into the abyss, this place out of time, and it drew us closer to the edge of sanity. This was a feeling of dread. It was a place that we had both been in the past. This was now, whenever it was, and it will remain in my soul until I pass these gates. There was a clearing in the area where the fire was at. It must have been 30 feet around. On the outskirts of the clearing were masses of what looked to be human bones. There were ribs and skulls, to be sure. How many I cannot say. There were piles. The fire pit was covered in a mass of blood. The stones that kept the flames inside were wet and glistening. I could see the thing in front of the flames, its back facing us, and it was swaying to and fro, back and forth, slowly, then quickly. Some surreal dance of death? At this point, we gauged its height to be nearly 8 feet tall. The sounds continued, then the small sounds of crying coming from just in front of the creature. We readjusted our position, and then it became obvious. The thing was on top of some woman or girl, grinding itself inside of her. The woman was laid over a rock, stomach to the stone, whimpering as the thing pounded inside of her. From this position, we could also see that there was something cooking over the fire. It looked like tentacles. It was the innards of something. Pieces of whatever it was were sprayed on the ground next to where this act of horror was taking place. Sarah gasped quietly. I must have done the same. Then the thing stopped its motion. The head slowly turned around. It had at least 5 or 6 red, glowing eyes that peered through its foul mane. There was no nose to be seen, but its mouth was already wide open, with flecks of red flesh draping its huge black lips. It was breathing heavy. Its inhuman eyes set themselves on us. It howled. It was a cry like unlike anything we'd ever heard. We didn't move. We watched it go back into motion, fucking and destroying the small, hairy female that laid underneath it. Then, in that moment, beyond the clearing, we saw numerous sets of glowing red eyes. They appeared from the darkness of the woods. Small, maybe 3-foot-tall creatures, dwarfed versions of the thing before us, started to make their way out of the darkness, directly towards where we were standing. Chills became my skin. Sarah's heart began to beat uncontrollably, and then we began to cough again. I could not breathe. The next thing I remember was Sarah trying to wake me up. We must have run and run further, find a way out of the place by the time we got back to the car, like I mentioned. A day had passed, and it was beginning to get dark again. The end.
Damn.
I tried.
That was good, dude.
That was not 20 minutes.
That was good.
That wasn't 20 minutes?
No, not at all.
Oh. Was that... I don't...
No, it's like, because you were like, it's got to be 20 minutes. So, that was good.
Okay, good.
Some of those descriptions were great, man.
I wanted to do more, honestly.
I could sort of feel the woods. I'm like, oh, this is...
I wanted to do more, but it was like, you know, with the time frame and my work schedule, I couldn't write it at work. I mean, I could have, but I would get fired. And then, but no, I tried. So.
Why'd you get fired? Bigfoot story.
Yeah.
Why is this hairy woman being pounded, it says?
Yeah.
Destroyed.
Dang.
Well, deep throat, or deep foot. Trying to leave a little bit to the imagination.
Yeah, that
was it Marie?
That was harrowing.
Was she one of the corpses?
That's,
was it even her? Were they? We don't know. I don't even know how I got out of it. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, Bigfoot raped.
I just know that these recollections have been fading in and out of my consciousness. And
how's that bum?
Yeah.
Did it hurt?
My bum. I don't know why, but it just all falls out.
So, all
right. So let's. All right. So we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this a scientific way.
Okay.
Right. We're gonna do rock paper scissors.
All right.
1, 2, 3, shoot.
Hey.
1, 2, 3, shoot.
I do that all the time too. I need to do it.
2, 3, shoot. Ah,
smash.
All right. So you go next.
All right.
It was. By the way, it was scissors, and then he'd even his rock against scissors.
Well, because I was like, he's going to do scissors again.
That's why I didn't ask.
Well, so if he wins, does he go next, or does he choose who goes next?
No, Paul won, so he goes next.
You want to go next?
I don't care.
What's funny is I was going to do rock, and I'm like, no, I'm going to, because I'm like, no, he's going to do scissors again, because he said it. So.
See, weird.
It was so.
It was a chess game.
Parenthetically, it was funny, they had an orientation for one of my old jobs, and like part of it was everybody got up and did rock, paper, scissors, and I was last man standing. I'm like, yeah! I don't like 50-some people.
Dang.
That's kind of a bad.
That's crazy.
I don't know.
I feel like a champ now.
Well, because I did the
same. Got lucky and beat you all.
I did the same thing you do, is you fucking do the same one twice, yeah. And maybe they fall for it.
Yeah.
And then you do it a third, like, you've got to
fucking... I've been doing that since childhood.
You got to beat them.
It's my strategy. Okay, well... There'll be a little bit of setup for this. Not that you need any setup, but only because it ties in slightly to a film that I made called Trailer Park Fright Night. But it's not a straight comedy, but it just ties in slightly. So a few, you know, maybe a couple hundred people have ever seen this movie, but it is on YouTube, so if you're curious, it's Trailer Park Fright Night.
It's amazing. Oh my God, I'm trying to think. Is Uncle Steed in this?
Kind of.
Oh.
All right. It's called He Has Slain His Thousands by Paul Kanellis. He shook the red plastic cup and the change clinked together loudly. Young fella. Come on, young fella. I don't want a handout. I stopped walking and lifted an eyebrow. I turned to look at him. He shook the cup again. Let me earn it, young fella. Tell you a story. You a tourist? My curiosity got the better of me. I walked over to him. Yeah, I mean, kinda, I guess. I mean, I'm from Michigan, though. He smiled, a big toothy grin. He pulled on his long matted gray beard. Yeah, Michigan, but you a long way from home, huh? I see your shirt. You come looking for them gorillas in the mist. He coughed a long laugh and shook the cup instinctively. I looked down at my shirt. It featured an illustration of a hunter saying, "Oh my God, it's Bigfoot." And a shot of an irritated Bigfoot looking back at him saying, "Oh my God, it's Tiny Wiener." I felt a little embarrassed, but I was intrigued. Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't think I really believe in Bigfoot. He stopped laughing, pushed his bottom lip out, and sighed. Where am I here? Okay. Loudly. After a couple of seconds, he shook the cup again. "Give me some change, city boy. That's first." I took a step back and reached into my pocket. His weathered smile returned. I looked at the change in my hand. "It's $2.38. "That's all right, that'll do." I dropped it in the cup. He stood up. "Where are you from, Tiny Wiener?" I laughed a little. "Marlette." His eyes widened. Oh, well, you live in the hotbed right there in Sanilac County, young man. Why the hell would you come 8 hours to Menominee to look for the Squatch? I shrugged. I don't know. Nothing in Marlette. Nothing in Croswell. He smacked his lips together and poured all the change from his cup into the right-hand pocket of his dirty blue jean shorts. Oh, ah, well. No Squatch in the cornfields? I smiled. Not that I've ever seen. Any friends seen him? No. Some say they have, but I know they haven't. He studied my face for several seconds too long until I started to feel uncomfortable. Hmm. So you came hoping to see the Menominee Sass, huh? I shrugged again. I mean, I don't know. I guess I sort of came to confirm that there ain't no Bigfoot here either. He snorted. Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't going to do this, especially for no $2, but you need to see something. Something in his tone of voice startled me. I looked around at the gas station. A few people were walking past, and no one was paying any attention to us. Where? Here? He gave another congested chuckle. No, wiener boy. You want some proof of the yelling Yeti? We got to take a drive. That your car? I nodded. Yeah, but I don't have time for that, bro. I can't be going on a wild goose chase looking for some fake creature. I need to get to my hotel. His eyes narrowed. Bigfoot ain't fake. Bigfoot's real as fuck. I rolled my eyes, but was secretly impressed by his conviction. 10 minutes later, against my better judgment, we were on the road. He fiddled with the radio stations. Nothing but classic rock out here, he muttered, trailing off into a near-whispered tirade about Buddy Holly and Sam Cooke. What's your name, sir? He looked up at me, and I could tell he was gauging whether or not he wanted to tell me. Dale. Dale Davison. He lifted his hand. Don't bother telling me yours, hotshot. We ain't getting married. I just want to tell you a story. So why do we have to go out into the woods? Can't you just tell me and we can get on with our lives? He laughed heartily. Oh, you do have some fire in there, huh, Marlette? Nah, you need proof. City boy needs proof. You gonna get proof. We drove in silence for a few minutes. I glanced over at him several times. I still didn't trust him, but I was in way too deep now. Okay, we are getting closer, young man, he grinned. Just up here, this is where my brother Steve and I came upon him. Minding our own business, sitting around a campfire, and we saw him. You saw him? Who? Bigfoot? He was getting excited. Yeah, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know. He squinted and cocked his head sideways for a dramatic effect. The wild man. We drove a little further, deeper into the dirt road. We were now surrounded by woods on either side. Hey, Dale, you sure we're safe out here? He stared straight ahead. Lord willing, he smiled at the corner of his mouth. And the creek don't rise. A couple minutes later, Dale was practically jumping out of his seat. Right here, pull off! I parked the car on the side of the road and we got out. The sun was still hovering above, casting long streams of intermittent light through the trees. Follow me, tiny wiener. Hey, I mean, you don't have to call me that. He was practically bouncing through the woods now. A homeless tigger, I thought to myself. Finally, he stopped in a small clearing. I felt simultaneously lost and like I knew exactly where I was. I had never felt this way before. Sit down here, Marlette. I did as he said, somewhat reluctantly. He sat cross-legged from me in the grass. Okay, here's what happened. God honest truth. Steve and I were camping right here in this very spot. I got up to take a piss. We had the campfire going. It was probably a couple hours later than it is now. I went behind that big old tree right there. Steve kept yelling, if you shake it more than twice, you're playing with it. I laughed despite myself. I laughed despite myself. Dale laughed like it was the funniest joke ever told, and he laughed for at least a minute straight. Okay, he said, wiping tears from his eyes. So right then, okay, I hear a snap, like a branch being broke. Not like a twig either. No, like a whole branch, Marlette. He put his finger in my face for emphasis. I recoiled slightly. I stepped off to the side, pulled up my pants, and took a look over to see if Steed was where I left him. He was, roasting a marshmallow, matter of fact. Steed likes him a certain way, lightly toasted, but not burnt, but with like a brown... I frowned a little, giving him a get-to-the-point style wave of my hand. Okay, so I froze now. Because I'm thinking, it's a bear? But really, I was thinking, it's the Menominee Monster. Because we heard all the stories, you know. Squash was stealing sheep and goats by the hundreds and feasting and leaving their carcasses out in the fields.
And Pappy Joe had always told me, stay the hell out of Foley Swamp because the Squatch are everywhere. I remembered those stories right then. I didn't believe them because, you know, where's the Bigfoot breeding population? But the strangest thing happened. I stood right there, a few feet from where we are now, and watched as the trees, he trailed off. His bottom lip started to quiver. The trees, there's no other way to say it. The trees started to walk. My head shot up now and I studied our surroundings. He spoke a little more quietly. I saw him. He came right out of the tree, Marlette. And I don't mean a hole in the tree. He was part of the tree. Then a second one came from a different tree. Then three. Then more and more, and they couldn't until they couldn't any longer be counted. A small army of sass, city boy. Big and commanding and as real as you and I. Steve was standing up now. He saw him too. And they were walking toward him. He called out to me. He said, Dale, I think it's probably time to go. He looked up to the sky for several moments. I interrupted his perverse reverie. Well, what did you do? I followed the path behind the tree back out to the road. Steed was there waiting and we couldn't help it. We wanted to run, but we watched. They dismantled our tents. They picked up our gear. They ate all our food, all silently. Then, as if they knew we were still there, the biggest one let out. Where am I here? Dadgummit. Reading off my phone. Okay. The biggest one let out the strangest, most unusual howl I have ever heard. It still rings in my ears some nights. I wake up thinking I just heard it and the tail end is still hanging in the air. I sat quietly trying to absorb the tale. It felt convincing, sure, sitting here in the woods listening to old Dale recount his Bigfoot story. All right, so you said there was proof here. What's the proof? He leaned in. On my last glance, looking in toward them, I noticed something very strange. He pointed up to the trees behind us. Still there, too, all these years later. My jaw dropped. The tops of the trees were actually braided together, as if someone had taken the branches and made a giant bridge in the sky. I tried to hide the surprise of the realization in my voice. Well, yeah, that's strange at all, but it isn't really proof of actual Bigfoot. He looked at me like I was the dumbest person he ever met. Boy, he said, how many people do you know can braid a motherfucking tree branch? He was right, and I knew it, but it still wasn't really proof. The sun was starting to set now, and I didn't feel any need to be out in these woods after dark. I stood up. Oh, yeah, I guess it is getting to be that time, huh? He said. You know, I never could get Steed to come back out here after that. Toughest SOB I've ever known, and he won't come out here for nothing. I laughed the fakest laugh of all time and stretched. I really wanted to run out of the area now, but I wasn't exactly sure where to go. Okay, Marlette, let's get you out of here. He walked alongside me for a few feet, then stopped dead in his tracks. Although, he said, his eyebrows raised, proof was promised. He leaned against a tree now and leaned down to take off his boots. He cupped his hands to his mouth, and then Dale Davidson screamed. And when I say scream, I mean the most unholy and inhuman sound that I have ever heard a man make. I laughed nervously and backed up a few steps. Dale stopped screaming and now just lay back, arms open against the big tree. And then I saw it. Born of bark and covered in hair, right out of the tree, just like Dale said. And then two and three, emerging from the tree as if they were connected. They were connected. I was walking backwards slowly while the huge arms were wrapping themselves around Dale. And just as he was almost completely engulfed, he opened his eyes and smiled at me. He was being pulled into the tree now, and he managed one sentence before disappearing with the creature. They ain't never gonna believe you, Marlette. I stumbled out of the grove, still moving backwards, watching the group of Sasquatch that now stood fully outside the trees. 20 or more, and they weren't moving, just silent and still, arms by their sides. I turned and ran as fast as I could in the direction of my car, and I could hear the harrowing cries of the Bigfoot like an unharmonious symphony of emergency sirens even as I punched the gas pedal and hit reverse. And just like Dale, almost every night I wake up to the echo of those indescribable howls, like chasing the shadows of the darkest dream. And just like Dale said, they aren't ever going to believe me.
That's awesome.
That's great, man.
Thanks.
That is definitely...
That's unique.
Yeah, the take I've never seen before.
Hey, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
So we have so far Bigfoot porn?
Alien Bigfoot porn.
Yeah, because that was pretty cool, too.
I was trying to do something different.
The Bigfoot had multiple eyes, and they were glowing red.
So,
I liked that,
so did it birth the big feetses? The baby big feetses? Big feet?
You don't remember.
Yeah,
are we going to shake you?
Shake my deep foot. Get my furry schmigma.
All right.
I smell a furry schmigma.
Furry schmigma.
Keep my hands off.
All right, I'm settled in. I'm ready to hear this. Right. I got a little couple paragraphs of this story, so I've been waiting to hear it for a few days.
All right. Are you ready? So it's called... Call the Wooden Heart for some reason. I don't know.
Ooh, I like that.
You never get the smell out of your nose. Never. It's been years since everything happened, but I can still smell the thing and sometimes catch myself reaching for my knife in case it survived and is out there somewhere. I keep the knife on me always, always, in case it's come for me. Because it will come. One of them will. It's just a matter of time and a matter of whether I can smell them in time when they do come for me. I was 15 when everything happened. My family was always artsy. My mom sold clothes she made at the farmer's market. My dad read poetry at a bar once a month. My sister taught electric guitar to kids to make some money. I skateboarded, which wasn't really artsy, but I put together my own boards and painted the decks myself, so whatever. We lived in a house on the edge of the city that had seen better days, but which had a heart that seemed to overcome the many challenges it saw, so when many of our friends moved away, we remained. That city and that home was our city and our home. We were country people. Not really. Now, I'm sure someone will read all this and roll their eyes, and that's fine. All that is fine. It doesn't matter. I don't need my life quantified and dissected. I don't need some stranger's validation. That's not why I'm writing this. I'm writing it so that there's a record, so that when another kid or adult or whomever writes about what they experienced, that there will be another record and slowly will create enough proof that people will stop calling all this crazy. All I know is I love my family and our home. We weren't perfect. We weren't always happy. We were just a family that loved one another as best we could, as much as we could. That's what I hold on to. That's what matters. The rest is just the bullshit that clouds the good times. The rest of it are the arguments, the pettiness, the lies, the anger, all those things that fill a family, the things that shadow all of us. But I can see past the bad and still hold on to the good. That's what matters. Back then, I never would have seen it, but I see it now. I see a lot now. Too much. It was 3 weeks before the beginning of the fall semester for both my sister Angie and me. She'd be entering college as a freshman, and I was heading into my junior year after being jumped over 10th grade. We were both entering weird places in our lives, and my mom and dad thought we should go on a strange sort of family trip like we were an 80s sitcom family. We just weren't those people. Mom and dad worked a lot, and vacations were just never something we worried about. Heck, we were lucky to all sit down to catch a movie together or something to eat. We were all so caught up in ourselves that we would forget we were a family. And while we didn't like to talk about it, the fact was that we couldn't afford it. We lived in a house that was too big for us, had 3 cars they struggled making payments on, and we did the same thing most of middle America seems to do, and that's ignore the fact that we weren't as well off as we liked to portray. I don't say that to damn anyone or to shame anyone. I just see things differently now. All this is to say that going away, even for a weekend, was a big deal for us. I found out after that weekend, and after my numbness set in, that my mom and dad had sold a rare coin collection mom's grandfather had given her so they could afford the trip. Always meant to buy it back, but things get away from you when you're grieving, I guess. And I just never did. I never did a lot of things after that weekend, though. We had a cabin 4 hours from our neighborhood, from our hobbies, from our friends, and from everything we knew. We weren't a camping family, so they rented a cabin for the weekend. It wasn't extravagant, but it was nice, and they had paid a little extra to have it decorated with balloons and a congratulations banner, and there was a cherry chocolate cake in the fridge, a favorite of my sister and me. It was amazing, and I started to cry. It was all too much, the fear of school and losing my sister to college, but Mom and Dad had done this for us, for all of us. It was amazing. We spent that night Friday talking and laughing and, well, fighting when my sister Angie told Mom and Dad that the friend she was spending so much time with over the past few months was a boyfriend Mom and Dad had thought was long gone. A much older guy, God, what was he, 24, I think? and someone my father had once caught in her room and had almost murdered when he did. They were in love, Angie said. He was going to move to Cincinnati to be near her while she went to school. Only he was still much older than her and gave off a weird vibe that even I didn't like. Mom and Dad hit the roof. Angie broke a glass. Dad threw the rest of the cake against the wall. And that was that. Good night, Maureen. The next morning, everyone kept to themselves. Angie stayed in bed and read. Mom and Dad hunched over coffee and talked in animated whisper. And me, I wanted to see what there was to see. I'd never really been out to the woods, so I wanted to go take a look around. While we didn't live in a big city, we also didn't live near deep woods. Big woods. Really big woods. It was strange being out there, so far from anyone I knew but my family. I walked and walked and walked and realized that skate shoes and jeans were not the best decision for trails and mud, but I didn't care. My feet got wet. My feet got soaked. I kept going. I watched the trees turn greener, grow thicker, grow bigger, and suddenly I felt small, 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 and I liked it. It made me feel like this place would be here the day I died and would be there long after. It was calm. It was a calming feeling. Not one of despair, but one of contentment that the world would go on without me, and for whatever reason, that calmed me down from everything that had happened the night before. I found an open area and sat down on an exposed root and just sat and stared out at the green ocean and listened to it sing to me. I had to have been there for at least an hour because I started to nod off, the air having turned warm enough that when I propped my elbows on my knees and dropped my head in my hands, I started to fall asleep. I looked at my watch and saw that it was after 2 and realized that I'd better get back, or my family would call out some sort of movie-style rescue party. I got up and started back down the path towards the cabin, wondering how many people had come to these woods to disappear and did, when I was struck by a strong, thick scent. That's the only way I can think to describe it, thick. It was an animal scent that reminded me of what a dead thing smelled like if it had been in the sun too long. I didn't think much of it, other than it being odd. I had noticed it on my way out, but beyond that, it didn't mean much to me. I figured I'd made it a mile or so on the trail, so I picked up the pace to get back with hope that everything had magically been worked out and that there'd be some food left over for me. As I went, the smell got stronger and worse. It was hard to ignore it, but there wasn't much I could do other than brace myself for the possibility of finding something bloated and black and rotten somewhere up ahead. As I was walking, I noticed a path that had been beaten through the tall grass and weeds beside the regular trail. It was new. New enough that I didn't even remember it from the walk out, which was strange, but it was wide and looked heavily traveled. I stopped and looked around, then listened. I didn't hear anything, but someone had made this trail. I looked down and saw that it wound deep into the woods, into an area with huge trees that blocked out so much light as to make it perpetual night back there. Looking down the path made me shiver. It felt as if anything could be out there, and that was what got me moving again, my pace even faster, so that I was jogging now. I passed another trail, and another, all of them leading off to my left towards the darkness, and all of them looking new. The smell was overpowering here and made me nauseous. I tried to hold my breath as I started running, immediately hating myself for not keeping up with track as I became immediately winded. I saw another path up ahead, this one to the right, but when I saw the large shadow that was rushing towards me from the path, it was too late to stop and I collided with it and fell back onto my ass. I screamed but knew I was too far away from anyone for them to help me. The shape blocked my path and I immediately thought of the stories of stalkers in the woods, men who would live out there, living off the land, away from the world and waiting for people to wander into a trap. I looked up but only saw darkness that blocked the sun. Whoever this was, they were what stunk, and the scent of them made my eyes water and throat hurt. I tried to scoot backwards on my butt, thinking to run the way I had come in the hopes of getting away, but before I could make it more than a couple feet, the shadow leaned down and a powerful hand latched onto my ankle with enough strength to shatter it. I screamed again as the pain flashed through my body up from the break. The hand kept squeezing, and I could feel the bone fragments as they tore through my skin. I lifted my left leg and began kicking out of the shape and landed 1, 2, and almost a third blow before it grabbed that leg with its other hand and squeezed until my leg broke just above the knee. The pain was too much, and I fell backwards onto the trail and felt the vomit rise and erupt from my mouth and all over my face. I started to convulse and didn't notice for a moment that I was moving. I looked down towards my legs and saw that whoever had me was dragging me back down the trail and then down the side path that they had made. I bumped over rocks and roots and crashed against trees, but they didn't care. I squinted and saw that whoever had me was tall, their body blocking out the sun, but their skin looked wrong, diseased. They were hairy, but there were large patches where the hair was gone, and there was just brown skin beneath that looked scabbed over and oozing. As my eyes adjusted, I noticed how the skin on the body of whoever had me seemed to hang loose off of it like clothes on a hanger. I watched the mostly hair-free skin at the back of its arms shake back and forth as it moved me. Whoever had me was sick, very sick. I took a deep breath to scream again, but the shadow spun around before I could even open my mouth. They let out a low growl that made it sound like a cornered dog. I got a glimpse of its eyes then, which were dark and deeply set, and for a split second I saw a mouthful of sharp yellow teeth, and the face around it was dark and sunken, and it looked almost like a skull covered in thick, dark hair.
Ugh.
It turned again to return to dragging me when I saw a large rock connect and bounce off the thing's head. I heard it let out an enraged roar and spin around just in time for another rock to connect with its chin. The thing dropped my legs and leapt over me and towards whoever it was throwing the rocks. I rolled over painfully and saw my family standing in the trail, Mom and Angie holding rocks as my dad held an axe. Dad had the axe cocked and swung it forward, driving it into the shoulder of the thing that had attacked me as it landed in front of him. The thing howled with pain and reached a long arm out and grabbed my dad by the top of the head and started squeezing. My mother and sister started hitting the thing with their rocks, one blow from my mother catching it in the throat as it towered above the three of them. The thing continued squeezing my father's head as he flailed beneath it, and it turned to my mother and swiped at her with its free hand, its long black nails dragging across her face and popping her right eye. She screamed and fell to her knees, and it was like the world was made of screams now as my dad joined Mom, weakly reaching for her as blood coursed down his face, and I realized that I was screaming with them, but Angie was silent, a calm look on her face and her arms at her sides as the thing hunched over Dad, and suddenly there was a loud crack, and Dad went limp. The thing let go of Dad, and he fell hard to his knees, then forward, blood and something else pouring through two deep cracks in his skull. The thing roared and pulled the axe from his shoulder and dropped it. It turned and looked back at me, and as it did, it knelt and grabbed my father's arm, and then it started to walk back towards me, and I realized how sick it must be, as its skin hung so loose that it almost looked as if it was playing dress-up, as if it was pretending to be something it wasn't. Its face, though, that stopped my screaming and will haunt me as much as its scent. As sick as the rest of it was, there was something in its eyes that reminded me of a shark, but a shark driven not by hunger, but by some sort of hate. Its eyes were empty and emotionless, the closest thing to emotion coming from it being the snarl that was carved into its skeletal face. It strode past me and grabbed my left leg and started dragging me and my father's body along as it made its way towards the darkness that was spreading deeper into the woods. I dropped my head down and saw my sister still standing there, watching as my mother clawed at her destroyed face. I could feel myself getting cloudy. I closed my eyes, then opened them, then closed them again. Maybe it was better to just let go, to give in to the nothingness and to let it take me. I looked back and couldn't process what I was seeing. My sister was running down the path towards me with the axe held high. What was she doing? I followed her with my eyes as she ran past me in a blur and swung the axe into the thing's back once, then twice, then a third, then a fourth time, dropping the blade into it and pulling it free so fast that the thing could do nothing but howl. It let go of Dad and me and spun around in time to take the blade in its chest. It stepped back and howled, and almost instinctively it pushed outwards and its long arms caught Angie in the chest and pushed her back 2 feet, but she was back at him again, swinging the axe. The thing took two big steps backward and raised its arms up to protect itself, but she dropped the angle of her swing and caught the thing in the side and tore to the left, opening its belly so that black blood poured out. The thing screamed again and fell backward. Angie was about to go in for the kill when something bigger than the thing that attacked me broke through the trees and wrapped two long dark arms around my sister and then broke through the trees on the other side and disappeared with her in an instant into the woods. I didn't even hear my sister scream. I looked at the thing that had attacked my family and saw it trying to push its intestines back into its stomach with no success. I swam through the flood of pain I was in and crawled to the thing, picking up what I thought was the first rock to hit the creature and made my way up to its head. It looked from its stomach to me, and there was a moment of confusion on its face, as if it had just woken from a nightmare. Before it could get beyond that gray veil, I drove the stone into its face and then did it again and again and again until its already ruined face, its nose partially gone and the muscle revealed along its cheek, caved in upon itself, and the thing was still. Somewhere deep in the woods, something howled, then another something, then more until it was a chorus of horror. I looked out in that darkness and knew they were there, somewhere, and it wouldn't be long until they came for me and Mom. I crawled back to where Mom was and realized she was gone. I looked around and saw her jacket caught in some branches down a new path and understood. In her pain and terror, she must have gotten confused and ran down the wrong path, or been taken down it. Either answer led to the same realization that she was gone. She was gone. They were all gone. A light rain began to fall as clouds started to cover the world around me, and I clenched my teeth and started crawling back down the trail as fast as my body will allow, my legs dragging behind me like anchors. The closer I got to the cabin, the more alive the woods became until I started to see large, dark shapes running in the darkness, climbing closer and closer to the path, but not yet to it. Maybe they feared me, or maybe they were just waiting until dusk. Somewhere behind me, a large tree fell over. I looked ahead and saw the cabin and dug my torn and bloody hands into the ground and pulled myself even harder forward. Something crashed through the woods behind me, and I turned and saw part of my mother lying in the path. It was a leg and part of her torso, as if she had been torn in half somehow. Something nearby growled, and I growled back, determined to fight whatever came for me until there was nothing left of me. When nothing broke through to get me, I started crawling through the mud again, and when I got to the cabin, I found it was open and crawled inside and closed the door and pushed myself against it. I lay there a moment before the first rock hit the house, then another and another until the rain was replaced by falling rocks and debris that bounced off the cabin and broke the windows. I reached up and locked the cabin's door and then crawled towards the satellite phone my dad had borrowed from a friend who worked as a forest ranger. The friend, Dan, had his number programmed into the device in case Dad had an emergency, so I pushed that button and he picked up immediately. Andrew? Andrew, is everything okay? They're dead. They're all dead. Jessica? Jessica, honey, is that you? What are you? They're dead. They killed them. Those fucking things killed all of them, and they're here for me. They are here. Silence for a moment. Then, I'm on my way. Hide. And I did. I grabbed a steak knife off the kitchen table, then made my way to the cabinets under the sink, and I pushed myself in there and hid. It wasn't long before the sound of falling debris stopped, and then came an eerie silence. I heard footsteps outside the cabin, sounding as if there were a lot of those things out there. They made no sound, though. After a while, I thought I heard one of them trying to get the door open, but before it could, I heard another scream out, and then heard breaking glass. One of them must have tried to get in through a broken window and cut themselves. It went on and on, and there came a point where my exhaustion outweighed my fear, and I fell into a black, dreamless sleep. When I woke, I was in a ranger station, surrounded by police and paramedics, and my father's friend, his hand holding mine. You're safe. You're safe. You're safe. Except I wasn't. I'd never be safe. Ever. They never found my father or sister, the rest of my mother. They never found the one that we killed. They found blood, but couldn't identify, and some hunter's old trail camera picked up some things that no one would talk about. And deep in the woods, real deep, they found an old door frame and door standing wide open in the middle of a clearing, but that was it. Whatever those things were and wherever they came from were gone, back to the darkness. I never walked after that. I hoped and I worked, but the damage was too severe, so when I finally got out of the hospital, I went right into a wheelchair where I remain to this day. My dad's friend Dan moved me into his house, and he and his wife Lisa took care of me, and I lived. That's all. I lived, and I still live. But I smell them from time to time, and I know they smell me. We have each other's scent, and we'll never forget it. A day will come, someday, when one of them, or many of them, will come for me. Will come for me to drag me into the woods where my family disappeared, and that's why I carry this knife. I will fight them. I will fight them until there is nothing left. And when there is nothing left, I will simply slit my throat.
Damn.
Damn, dude. That was inspiring.
I like the skin that was like a dress up.
Yeah.
That was good.
Oh, yeah. And the stink like Zach. Oh, my God. That was great. Seriously, man. You guys really outdid yourselves tonight.
Hooray!
Yeah, that was very good stuff.
And you said it was going to be crap.
No, Ringler, I knew it was going to be great.
Ringler never writes good.
No, I knew it was going to be good already because I read some of it.
He said it.
I got a preview.
All right, so do we want to talk real quick about what we've seen recently?
Deepfoot.
All right, so Paul has seen The Void finally.
I saw The Void.
Oh, what'd you think?
I liked it.
Huh?
I thought some of the gore was corny.
Some of the what?
The gore. Mm-hmm. It kind of pulled me out of the darkness of the story. Like, it'd be like some set piece with just a ton of, like, bodies. And I was like, this is kind of goofy in here. But I really liked it. It was a good story. It had a lot of original ideas. I mean, it looks so good.
It's almost like it could almost be like a side story, almost like From Beyond or something. Because, like, the guy is very, very pertinent.
It was spooky, though. And, like, the shots of the,
Well, there's some shots outside that
yeah.
were really creepy yeah. and just great.
That is Lovecraft meets, you know, Hellraiser.
Yeah. With a little bit of the fog, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
It was really good. I thought it was good, too. Same thing, though. I mean, it was really impressive the first time. Then I watched it a second time, and I analyzed it more. And, you know, it's... okay, so maybe... Did you ever see a movie called The Johnsons?
A long time ago.
Not in every single way, but it reminded me in that where there's some really cool imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Some shot really well. And it had some gore.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't all add up, and there was not without its, you know, faults.
Right.
But I enjoyed the fuck out of it because of what it was.
It was a hell of an effort.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
Yeah.
For sure. I was interested the whole. I wanted to know what was going to happen the whole time.
Uh-huh.
I thought the ending was pretty ballsy too.
And it makes you want more movies like that.
More.
It's kind
of
like kind of fun.
Well, the acting was all good too.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think I knew any of those actors.
No, I didn't.
Oh, God, the doctor. I've seen him in something else.
He was good, too.
Yeah, he was good. I didn't know what the fuck to expect.
Yeah, I watched it. I avoided everything. I didn't know anything about it.
I avoided it.
Well, yeah, I liked it. It was good.
Deepfoot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else did you see?
I saw... What's it called? The Black Coat's Daughter.
Oh, really? Okay.
That was Oz Perkins.
Yeah, I've seen people talking about it.
I liked it.
The Black Coat's Daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of it.
It's Anthony Perkins' son. It's the movie before The Pretty Things. I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
Oh.
But it just now came out. I think. I'm not positive about that.
Is it on Netflix?
I rented it.
It's like the making the festival circuit right now.
Oh, yeah, it's in theaters. Yeah. But it was really good, and it was darker and scarier than The Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. Did you guys see that one?
Mm-hmm. I think you can rent on VOD now.
Yeah, you can.
Say, okay.
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. But it was good. It was really well thought out. I mean, this guy knows how to make movies. And it's beautiful work. And I didn't realize until later that I've seen him act in movies. So he's an actor. He does like character actor stuff.
That's cool.
But it was good. It was really good.
All right.
It was smart. And it jumped around. The story jumps around a little bit, which I always enjoy that. Watching people put a puzzle together. Yeah, it was effective. Dark as hell.
Huh.
And like a few moments where you're just like, holy shit, what just happened? That you didn't expect.
That's cool.
So yeah, pretty good.
I don't think I've seen anything that I can really think of. I was trying to think, I'm like, have I watched anything really? No.
Yeah.
Like, we just watched stuff I've seen before around here.
I watched a super shitty Western called Stagecoach.
Oh, you mentioned that at the con.
Oh.
I didn't watch that.
That was so bad. It was Trace Adkins, the country singer, I guess.
Oh, no, I thought this was... This was...
After the Vincent Price one. I just watched this a couple nights ago, and it was just... Oh, I had Judd Nelson in it.
I watch
every Western. I can't help it. I'm drawn to it.
You need to help it.
That one was bad, and I watched it all the way through.
Did you ever see
it? It seemed like they shot it all in the same stretch of woods. And like they're making bonfires in the daytime. It was like the sun was out, and they're all sitting around with a bonfire. It was just...
Did you watch Jane Got a Gun?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
What's that girl?
Natalie Portman.
Yeah. Yeah. The Star Wars chick or Black
that was,
Velvet or
oh, that
Swan.
Was,
blah, blah, blah.
That was Tombstone compared to Stagecoach.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, though. I liked it. What about, did you like Magnificent Seven remake?
It was all right. It had moments.
Yeah.
I loved Denzel.
Yeah.
I loved Vincent D'Onofrio. His character was great.
He was great.
Great.
Absolutely.
More of him.
Yeah.
That would have been an amazing movie.
Yeah.
Have you seen
Beyond the Gates? Barbara Crampton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you see that recently?
I watched it a while ago, but I don't think we talked about it here.
Did you see that yet?
No, I just hit Netflix, I know.
That was really original.
And yeah, really original. had some very gory moments, straight fucked up gory shit.
Yep.
And it was like, you know, one of those '80s.
It almost felt like an '80s movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, but you know how you ever watch the Goldbergs?
Mm-hmm.
You seen it? You know how they kind of just like, oh, that was in the
'80s. Yeah, yeah.
It didn't have that feeling, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
Because Stranger Things is more organic than, like, the Goldbergs or whatever. But that's going for a different
Stranger Things
agenda, obviously.
Stranger Things.
I keep forgetting that there's Hopper. A second season of that coming out.
Yeah.
Hopper.
Whee!
What do you guys think about Hopper being
playing Hellboy?
Oh, that whole fucking thing's stupid. The whole fucking mess.
I saw the day before it hit all Dread Central and everything. Because I got homeboy.
I follow Mignola. Or Mignola.
Yeah, yeah. So he updated his status.
Yeah.
And he talked about it there, and I'm like, oh man, as soon as Chris sees this, he's gonna be like that fucker.
Well, no, I mean, I called that shot. Like,
you did. That's what I mean.
But I just think it couldn't be more of a wrong-headed move.
Yeah.
And it's weird that people are like, I'm excited. This is like, this shit ain't. It probably ain't gonna get made. If it gets made, it's gonna tank. Because they're like, oh yeah, R-rated comic book movies are a big thing now.
I knew
they're not
gonna
go fucking
too.
See it. Do you remember? Like, all you have to do is cast your mind back to when fucking Amazing Spider-Man came out, and they're like, what the fuck? So this is a reboot of Spider-Man? We just had three Spider-Man movies,
yeah.
Like 4 years ago.
Yep.
But this is different. It's a different. No, it's not still fucking Spider-Man. He's still a fucking kid. It's still the fucking same shit.
Here's the origin again.
Yeah, it's like it's the same shit. Like. They're going to be like, oh, cool, the new Hellboy movie. Yeah, they're going to go like, oh, that's not, okay, this is different. Like, it's gory.
Yeah.
Okay, and all right, this is a different Hellboy and a different Abe and a different, okay, I guess. And yeah, no. And the problem, all right, here's the thing. If I get it, Mignola's, and I never know how to pronounce his goddamn name. Mignola.
I think you got it.
I never know if it's Mignola or Mignola.
Hell dead.
Mignola.
Yeah. So I get that he had a burr in his bonnet about how Del Toro interpreted Hellboy. I get it. The core Del Toro got right. Like, you know, this guy who unfortunately has this part to play in the end of the world and he doesn't want to play it.
Right.
He's doing everything possible to not play that part.
Right.
He has no choice. But he threw in other stuff that honestly, may added more depth to the character than the comic has.
I agree.
The comic doesn't give a fuck about what Hellboy. Hellboy is a cardboard cutout engine of destruction, and kind of like he has this impending doom, but he's not intended to be a 3D character.
And Del Toro understood that.
Yeah, he made him a monster to sympathize with. In the comics, everybody just, the world just accepts that Hellboy exists. He does this shit. They don't freak out when they see him. They don't hide him. He's out in the world. It's totally different. But the thing with the comics is, and if he's going to do a one-off, that's why I fucking hate that he's doing live action, is there's such a deep mythology to it. Like, painfully deep. Abe Sapien has, like, a... And I'm on the verge where I have, like... I forget the last... Like, the last kind of arc for Hellboy, and then the last arc for VRPD, and the last arc for Abe. Hellboy has his own arc where he has, like, a destiny. Abe has a destiny. Liz has a destiny. Like, so it's to do a fucking one-off movie, and there's so many side characters that they have in there, like Lobster Johnson and fucking a Homunculus and Johan, who's in the second one, is a much weirder character. Like, there's all this stuff.
Doesn't Lobster Johnson even get a book?
Oh yeah, he has, like, he's in the comic, and he's in BRPD and stuff. He pops in and out, but yeah, like, there's so many weird things.
There's just a lot of mythology
to not do it, because the thing to do would have been a BRPD animated,
yeah,
and then you can fucking, like, it would have been, and it was again been MA, so it would have been rated R,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, I guess, for gore that you have to do, but like, it would have been a huge hit.
Yeah.
You don't. And again, you don't have to have any of the cast members back. You don't have to have anybody ask, you know, as if you would, but ask permission. You just fucking do it, and it's kind of just understood, like, this is its own thing. It's BRPD, blah, 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 blah. But to do it this way seems so petty.
Yeah.
And so small. And I get it. He's annoyed at Del Toro.
Yeah.
Or whatever his little...
And it is his thing. I mean,
yeah, it's his thing, but it totally feels like, I'm going to take my ball and do my own thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's stupid. And the money people are just looking at... fucking Deadpool receives and Logan receives. Yep. It's like Hellboy ain't that.
I knew that was going to happen, too.
People aren't in love with that character like that. Deadpool people love because he's fucking filthy mouse, and he just, he's doesn't, he is the character that he doesn't give a fuck about the fact that he's a superhero.
And what makes it work is that it's like that.
Yeah.
That's how he is already, before the movie.
And Logan, like, finally, between that and the last Wolverine movie, you finally get to see what Wolverine would fucking really be like.
Right.
Like, it's not like he was ever meant to be this gory, terrible character, but, like,
he's pretty bad.
He has claws on his hands. Yeah. And he has, like, huge anger issues. And so, you got to see that.
Which was badass.
Yeah.
He had an anti-hero for no reason.
Yeah.
You finally watched it, I hope.
I still haven't seen it.
What?
Oh, wow. Still have not seen Logan.
It's great. God. I actually just bought...
It's so sad.
I bought Old Man Logan, the comic, and didn't realize it was, like, a long series. I'm like, oh. And then I just bought... a couple nights ago, I bought The Death of Wolverine, because I'm like, oh, it's fucking...
Yeah, I was reading
like,
those,
I'm cheap, so.
Those arcs.
But yeah, I'm just... The Hellboy shit just annoys the piss out of me. Like, I could go on for a while. And again, it's such a good... Hellboy's such a
Opened
great
a
comic.
Opened a can of worms here, man.
Yeah.
You sure did.
It's such a great comic, and it's a shame that it's got to go this way. And it's a bummer, too, because you read, like, when it happened, like, it was like a breakup. Because, like, Ron Perlman didn't say anything, but he kind of said, like, I'm getting a lot of love. I appreciate it. And Del Toro...
Well,
Del Toro and he kind of reached out to one another, and...
They wanted to do three.
Oh, yeah. And even...
we all wanted
him. Blair even kind of made mention of, and kind of, she gave him kind of their, like, hey, go do your thing, man. But, yeah, it's a bummer, because...
It is. I wanted to see Hellboy 3.
And again, like, they're like, well, with budget, and Del Toro wouldn't budge on the budget and stuff, and I'm sure that's part of it, but I think Mignola's mind was made, unless somebody's going to give him a fucking huge check, like, here is $250,000, we're going to do this movie. He'd be like, okay, cool. Like, do I get to keep the rights afterwards? I'm going to go do my own thing?
Right, right.
But, yeah, no, art, the way movies are right now.
Well, what year was Golden Army?
I want to say 10 years ago is what people...
Was it even that?
2011. It was a little while.
I thought it was a little more recent than
that.
It
might have been, maybe 2010.
Soon for a reboot.
They do this shit, and it confuses audiences, and it's just silly. And again, like, the thing to do would have been to do it animated, get everybody interested, get his rating up. Like, everybody talking about, oh, it's great. It's the next, big series on Netflix, and then
cement the mythos a bit.
And someone's going to come by and say, like, hey, how do you feel about rebooting this thing live action? We think this could be quite a property.
Right.
And then you just mean, but whatever. Daddy knows best.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't...
Did you see Dylan Dogs getting a series?
They talked about that shit for a while. Which is funny, because, it depends on where it's going, but, like, they tried that shit with Constantine.
Yeah.
But again, like, they tried to take Constantine's kind of fangs out.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been one to have rated R, if you're, Cloak and Dagger, too.
I've not seen... Oh, I did see the trailer for that. I'm at a point where it's not even, like, superhero... Like, I'm over them. I just kind of like, meh.
Well,
it's interesting that it's different.
That's the thing that I think is interesting. Like, Cloak and Dagger is a really super interesting comic and idea. And if they did it right, it could be scary. It could be, really good. But I think it'll go more toward the CW type. Yeah, I do. Which is kind of a bummer.
I have to say it was great to see Guardians, how great Kurt Russell was. Like,
I still haven't seen it.
He is so
good. I'm so irritated.
He's so good in it.
I'm probably going to try to see it this week.
Yeah. Love it.
I keep hearing good things about...
I want to say stuff, but,
Michael Rooker, too. People keep talking about how good he was in it.
He has the best line in the whole movie. Like,
don't tell me a Dave.
I'm not saying a thing.
Don't put it in a text.
I got a boner.
That is a great line. Man.
And he did. He had one.
Man. Can't top that writing. James Gunn, you genius.
Done it again.
Yeah. Did you... Oh, see, I know.
Don't even...
He popped Logan spoilers into a dang chat session.
Not really.
Are you guys excited for Alien? I am. I just
it looks good.
It's funny that she came out and everybody like it's really good, blah blah. And now that everything's come out, like it's terrible. It's the worst one in the series.
What?
And I'm like, I like Prometheus. I'm just gonna take it and see what happens.
Yeah, I like Prometheus. People say that people didn't like Prometheus.
I
like
it too.
I like it a lot.
I'm sorry. People like the fucking what is it? The Fast 8. They want to see that. I don't give a fuck what people think.
I've never seen one of those fucking movies.
I've never seen one all the way through.
My friend watched the new Alien movie the other day, and he's a huge sci-fi buff. Just loves good shit, you know, Robert Meyer Burnett. And he said that it was a really great movie in a Roger Corman Galaxy of Terror type of way, but he doesn't feel like these are aliens anymore. They're like, you know,
monsters.
Words. It doesn't feel like they're aliens.
The first thing that got me interested was seeing the alien in the trailer. I was like, ooh,
it's
good.
I love monster movies.
That's all I care about.
People get over it because
I like Galaxy of Terror.
Right. Me too.
Alien.
Robert Englund.
Oh, yeah.
Alien, it was never Alien. Aliens is not... It's Aliens. It's completely different. There's a ton more dudes. It's an action movie.
Right.
Like,
just accept that
Alien
and move along.
3 is a gritty, like, creepy-ass prison movie. Like, I get it's this weird revisionist shit that people pull.
I know.
I can't believe the series.
They're just parroting. They just parrot everyone.
It's like, if you don't dig it, then don't fucking go see it, man. There's a lot of shit I don't dig, and I'm not, like, I'm... In my heart, I don't give a fuck about the new Hellboy movie. Just don't care. Like, just don't care. So it had to look real goddamn. But it could be amazing. So when it comes out, I'm not going to sit there like it's terrible,
right?
Because I didn't fucking see it,
right?
I just don't.
You won't have an opinion on it,
yeah?
Because you haven't seen it.
When you finally see it, you'll have an opinion.
At the end, I doubt it.
Whatever. But I'm the same way. It's like I'm easy to please. If somebody's like, ooh, like they were saying about Prometheus, like that's your opinion. That's great. You have your own brain and your own eyes. I really enjoyed Prometheus.
Well, everyone's bringing their what they expect into it. Instead of just letting somebody have a story unfold and just accept it for what it is.
Well, and they sit there and they act
like...
Like
that Paul Stanley album, Live to Win.
Yeah.
You gotta accept it for what it is.
Yeah.
Well, and they sit there and now the thing is like, I really want to see whatever his goddamn name is, because he's a fan and he wrote a script and he knows people because he's in Hollywood and he got a bunch of people like, hey, Sigourney Weaver, you want to be in this one? Even though we killed your fucking character off.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
Blumpkin Camper.
Like,
yeah.
Name is like, hey, guy, your character got killed off, too. You're going to be in this one, too. Get the band back. Okay, cool. So it's better to act as if no movies happened after 3 or after 2 or after whatever the fuck. That's better than just letting the guy who created the shit do his own thing. Like, that's better.
Add to the myth.
Yeah, and from a dude, and again, I love District 9, and he's a great, like, visually a fantastic filmmaker. Chappie ate my dick. And Elysium.
I liked Elysium.
Gnawed my dick.
Yeah, Elysium was good. I liked
Neither
I
was
liked
terrible,
that.
But both of
Chappie, I thought was pretty
Chappie
crappy.
Was borderline terrible.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, with Chappie.
I walked out thinking, this is crap.
That wasn't too great.
D. Antwoord ruined it. And it's not even their fault. It's because, like, he was jacking off so much to them being in it. Like, you're going to play yourselves, and you guys are there. You would, like, no. No.
Yawn.
And then fucking Elysium. What the fuck's her name?
Jodie Foster.
Fucking. I don't know what the fuck that was, but it took me out of the movie.
It was weird.
It was the weirdest, dumbest thing, and it took me out of the movie completely.
I'm like, you watched the date, your accent is on point.
Yeah, your accent is on point. This movie is, it wouldn't have been anything without this accent. How do you not just like, I'm going to give you my own money. You just come in.
The weirdest thing is that District 9 to me is like a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's almost untouchable.
And now they want to make District 10.
Oh, that's not going to be a good idea. That's not a good idea.
Man, fucking fans.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots.
Yep.
It's like, it's so funny because it's like that thing prequel came out and everybody's like, yeah, I don't like it. I wish it was this. I wish it was that.
Yeah.
I wish a lot of fucking things. the paint shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I wish it was, like, they went to the trouble to make fucking for real real special effects. I wish they would have used them. It was a dumb move, but I still think it's a pretty rad movie.
They made
the Thing prequel?
Yeah.
Four,
yeah, me too.
Pumpkinhead sequels.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish one of them was good.
Which one? Fans clamored for Blood Wings. Oh, man, if Blood Wings was on Blu-ray, fucking yeah.
I mean, I bought it. I bought it, but...
God, I forget how stupid people are.
But
well, shit, I laugh every time, like, there's some obscure fucking movie, like that movie Slayer is coming out. Like,
right.
Oh, yeah.
The Slayer?
Yeah, it's going to be on Blu-ray. It's going to be an amazing edition if fans are like, oh, I've been waiting for this. This is the movie I've been dying for. That's the movie you were dying for? Of all the fucking shit out there.
A lot of those, I think they can't help
it.
That's
the one with the double feature with Scalp.
Yes!
You watched that shit when you were 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. Because there's no other explanation.
Oh, my God. It's that silliness drives me batty. And I get it. I love shitty movies. I love movies that are like, I want the car on Blu-ray because I fucking love the car. Is it good?
Right.
It's a big car.
Right.
It's interesting, but yeah, so. All right, let's... Let's shut this fucker down.
Alrighty.
Schmegma.
And good night.